Hello and welcome to the Outdoor Lives podcast. My name is Mike Rain and I am the presenter and sponsor of this podcast. You can find out more about me, the workshops, my books, the other products I have to sell you at mikerain.co.uk. You can also get early access and ad-free access to these podcasts by joining my Patreon channel. That's patreon.com/Mike Rain. If you are on Facebook, you can follow me on Notes from the Hill, where you get lots of free updates from what's going on out and about here where I live in Eriri. If you would like to take over the sponsorship of this podcast, then I would be delighted to hear from you. But until that day, it'll be me wittering on about my products. The Outdoor Lives podcast is a series of podcasts aimed at outdoor leaders, particularly mountain leaders, mountaineering instructors, hill and moorland leaders. We tend to talk about the uplands, but there's a lot of interest for lowland leaders too. We try to talk to people who have an interest in the same places that we do. So land managers, conservationists, environmentalists. We talk to landowners. We talk to other people who work on the land. They may be farmers, they may be working with farmers, they may be working on conservation projects. We also try and talk to people who work in our field. So we've got people who've written books about being in the outdoors, we've got people who run outdoor courses, and we've got people who've done things a little differently. You know, maybe they've become an internet sensation, or they've won an award for the work that they do. So there's a wide range of podcasts. You can get all the back editions on whatever podcast platform you listen on. If you want some of the more specific ones, then just join me on Patreon. It's only £4 a month, and you've got access to most of the backlog of Outdoor Lives. So be lovely to hear more from you. Meanwhile, here's today's podcast. Thank you for listening. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Lives podcast. My name is Mike Rain and my guest today is Angela Charlton. Angela is a director of Ramblers Cymru, so we're here today to find out all about what she does and how she does it and what the Ramblers are getting up to in Wales. And so, welcome to the podcast, Angela.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. Can we start with what the Ramblers do? Who are the Ramblers and what do they do? And
cool. Small question to start with. Yeah. So where to start? Well, I can talk about Wales. Clearly, people know we have a background and a history in campaigning, yeah. Kinder Scout being the most famous, obviously, and 90 years ago now, and we're still going strong, but still having to campaign, still having to fight for our rights, yeah. Which is quite a big deal in Wales when we consider that approximately 50% of our path network is currently impassable. Now, that's not an improvement, is it, on where we've come from? So the way forward for us is tending to be to work in partnership with others and sort of gathering a momentum and highlighting the importance of our access and our path networks.
Let me just jump in there, yep. Angela. 50% of paths are impassable. What, yes. What does that mean?
So that could be, so this is sort of what we're guessing. Some local authorities are worse than others.
Yeah.
So this could be anything from locked gates to barbed wire to simply vegetation being overgrown.
Yeah.
Impassable could be broken stiles. Yeah. And there's a fair few of those around as well, dotted around the country. Quite a mixed bag.
So we would argue they're not been used, that's why they're impassable, therefore they're not really needed?
That's an interesting one, isn't it? So if you can't go through, you're not going to. And you have to go through every day for it to be a useful path, part of the network? No. So it's self-fulfilling, isn't it?
Mm.
That if you don't clear it, no one's going to use it. And that's not an excuse not to clear it. It's the promotion, actually, I think that's most important. The
promotion?
Of the paths, where they are, where you can go, how great they are.
Yeah, because not everybody's poring over on survey maps looking for little public rights of way, are they?
Absolutely not. You know, there's a lot of people who go out there, they haven't got the confidence, they wouldn't know where to start with a map.
Yeah.
So having a signpost is essential.
Yeah, definitely.
That's really interesting. Now, I'm just in my head, I just went off on a tangent looking at a map of Wales and thinking if 50% of the roads were impassable,
yes,
that would be on the news, wouldn't it? You get half a dozen potholes and it's on the news.
Totally, yeah. Totally.
So, is that legal then to have 50% of footpaths and rights of way impassable?
It's a statutory duty to keep the path network open. So there is a duty placed on the local authorities to do that. Unfortunately, they're severely underfunded, as you can imagine.
Oh, goodness me, yeah.
In this climate that we're in.
Do they get a lump of money for paths, or do they have to work that out of their budget? You know, do they get highways fund? Could they choose to move money from other highways to footpaths? Is it a choice thing, or is it just...
It's very limited. So part of what we do is we lobby Welsh Government to ensure that funds come down to the local authorities, particularly for path networks, to keep them open. But it is tiny. I think the Active Travel Bill, which is significantly larger, is something we're calling for. We're calling for a minimum of sort of 10% equivalent of the Active Travel Bill. Wow. Now, if that was all joined up, we'd have better chance of opening up the path network and linking it into the Active Travel Routes.
So the Active Travel Routes are a different thing?
So they're funded differently. They are for use, not recreational use, so they are for active. That's what they consider as active travel.
Interesting. But they are footpaths as well?
There are a few footpaths. I think the majority of what we can see in Wales are those sort of tarmac cycle routes that link up towns, which are great
and great to get you
to the shops and what have you. But what you may find is just off to the side, there's a pretty good path network which is being ignored.
Oh, that's frustrating.
So it's just not joined up.
So you're lobbying government on that. You talked about working in partnership there as well. What do you mean by that?
So if we have so many of our path network struggling, it's not being opened, local authorities don't have the funds. What we do have, and what we're very good at in Wales, is motivating training volunteers who can get out and benefit from being in the outdoors, from doing something useful for themselves and for other people. So currently we have four projects across Wales with local authorities where we have a regional officer. So working with the local authorities are absolute wealth of knowledge on the public rights way, and then our experience and expertise in taking volunteers and communities, getting communities to take ownership is pretty important.
It seems to me that you've got an amazing network of volunteers, and I can't imagine there's obstruction in the local authorities. Is it really just down to finance? Is it down to government leadership?
I think there is no obstruction to the local authorities seeing the benefit of working with volunteers, and clearly they have to go through that health and safety rest of it. Yeah. But no, the fact that we worked with all local authorities just last year across the whole of Wales with a big European project we had shows that they are keen and we are keen. Mm. It's finding that small amount of funding, because you need somebody to manage the volunteers and to motivate, train, and sort of look after. That's the bit that seems to be missing.
You're not talking about billions, are you? When we talk about roads and rail, we talk about billions, don't we?
Yes.
You know, we're talking about relatively small amounts of money.
So 1.2 million over 2 years was something that we had.
Yeah.
And that put regional officers on the ground across the whole of Wales. It put in a development officer to help us attract funding. But even better, it also supplied, I think we put in over 145 gates that in 1 year. So we removed stiles. We have a lot of tools that came with the project, which we left with the communities.
Yeah.
You can do a huge amount with a small bit of money.
You can. And we know there's so much science and evidence that walking, just simply walking, is good for people's mental and physical health. Do you have a sort of a pattern line? Do you keep nagging the government and saying, look, you know this, you know this, you know this?
Yes, we do. And if only, it was all joined up. So, you know, you've got the NHS struggling, you've got all these various departments, you've got green infrastructure, you've got active travel. It just doesn't seem to come together. And I find as ramblers, we tend to sit in the middle of that, and we can make all those connections. And it's not rocket science, is it?
No, it's not. It's really obvious. We should be doing more of it. So I guess one of the issues is all these other bodies. It can be confusing to people who represents the countryside, who represents active use of the countryside. So, for example, a lot of people listening will be mountain leaders, mountaineering instructors, and they'll have had to join the BMC. So they may not be as familiar with the Ramblers. How do those partnerships with other representative of the countryside organisations work?
So I guess we tend to come together on things like the Sustainable Farming Scheme or the new Outdoor Recreation Bill that's being discussed at the moment. Oh, yeah. And, of course, we're in there backing that and supporting that. So we certainly come together when we can, we agree on some of those outcomes. And certainly with BMC, we have close connections in Wales, particularly around our policy.
That's really good. And I ride a bike sometimes. How's the relationship? Because I know Ramblers and cyclists, in my head, we're the same, just that some are on bikes. But I know it's not that simple, is it? It's a more difficult relationship at times.
It can be, yes, because sort of our approach in Wales is that the path needs to be appropriate for the use.
Yeah.
And having a blanket approach to cycling on all paths is probably not an approach we support. And I have to say, a lot of this comes down to behaviour, doesn't it? Behaviour of walkers with dogs on leads, cyclists as well. Nothing I like more than hearing a bell behind me gives me time to hop out the way.
I'm a big fan of bells. I just don't understand why people have a problem with bells. There's something depersonalising about a bell. If I say, however nicely I say, excuse me, it's me telling you to get out of the way. But if a little tinkle of a bell, it's a third party, and I think bells are really important and bells should be used. But it's that code of conduct that we really need to get wired, because in my head, walkers, cyclists, horse riders, people using the countryside in a non-mechanised way, really are singing from the same song sheet.
Absolutely we are, And I think we're all guilty, aren't we, of thinking we own the path, but nobody owns that path. It's there for everybody and for all of us to move through and enjoy the nature that we're travelling through.
Do people get path rage like they get road rage?
Do you know what? I have had path rage with a cyclist, I have to admit, because I have a dog on a lead.
Yeah.
And so it was just somebody who just wasn't aware of the code of conduct, and yet I have noticed a shift. I have noticed more tinkling of bells.
Great.
And I quite like it.
Yeah.
You know, and some people will shout out, and I always thank them.
Yeah.
And same with horse riders. It's not everywhere, but there's definitely been a change, I have
to say. That's great. And it's stopping and chatting, isn't it? That's really important, and I find that. So something some people are campaigning for at the moment is a right to roam, a sort of Scottish-style access in England and Wales. I know you share my discomfort with that. Why is that not a great idea?
Well, I think we have a most amazing network out there already, which needs our support. I think, so my members all came together. I'm very much member-led. A lot of my experienced members came together, and we discussed it several years ago. And we came to the decision that actually the path network is what was needed to be opened up.
Yeah.
And if people were left to roam, would they know where they could, it's probably a little bit scary all round at the moment.
It is really, isn't it? And because the other thing is that wild camping, isn't it? That's really difficult for people at the moment. Do the Ramblers have a view on that?
I think generally supportive, again, it's that code of conduct. It always comes back to behaviour.
Oh, doesn't it just?
And if you think of the farmers, you know, the pressure they're feeling under currently, is it necessary to...
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Yeah. Again, just for listeners, what's the relationship between the Ramblers and mountain training? Because I've met you personally at Mountain Training Cymru. Is there a sort of formal relationship there between the Ramblers and mountain training?
I think other than sitting on the board, as you're aware, we have Heather, who's our regional officer actually in the North Wales area, who herself is, she is mountain leader trained and all of that. I think the value of sitting on that board was some of the insights that I was able to bring from inside Welsh Government, because we work quite closely, we're in there lobbying all the time, and we were able to share that and also give our name and support. Certainly to the Adventure Smart, which was fantastic. Yeah. You know, so some of the initiatives that were coming out, we were able to spread that much wider across our membership.
That's brilliant. And is there a relationship between some of the mountain training qualifications and the training you do for walk leaders?
Interestingly. Oh, right. So the training that is delivered out of our GB centre, and a lot of that currently is e-learning. Scotland, it might be slightly different. In Wales, then, of course, we do very basic walk leader training for communities, and just, but it is quite low level. And I think there's probably some work to be done to look at the curriculum of what all the different organisations deliver, and not duplicate and make sure we fit in. I'm not sure how well that's happening.
No, it's difficult, isn't it, bringing it all together? You've got a tremendously difficult job, haven't you, bringing all this stuff together?
Yes, I think so.
And talking about Scotland, I remember a couple of years ago I interviewed Lucy Wallace. She was then the president of the Scotland Ramblers. So that, do you have any that sort of figurehead, same sort of?
So interestingly, we have a Leanne Wood,
of
who's
course,
our ambassador, who's absolutely amazing.
I bet she is.
She was out actually on International Women's Day last week. With one of our famous campaigners, Kate Ashbrook. So I brought my campaigning women together, and Bethany Handley, I don't know if you've heard of her.
I haven't come across Bethany, but I'm sure I will by the sound of it.
She's amazing. Yeah. She's in her early 20s, became a wheelchair user about a year ago, and is an activist for access to nature, a poet.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, I like to choose very strong vocal women where I can.
Yeah, that's excellent. Excellent to hear. Really good.
I actually joined the Ramblers myself this year, and I think it's something that you might want to consider. The main reason for me joining was to support their footpath work. We have such an amazing network of footpaths in Wales, and it seems such a shame that 50% of them are blocked or unpassable. Now, the Ramblers are just about the only people who can do a survey on a nationwide scale to find this out. And I think it was a few years ago now, they actually surveyed the whole of Wales, kilometre by kilometre, to assess the state of the footpaths. It's mostly done by volunteers, but then the Ramblers will support work parties to open up those paths. They will support local authorities. They will support landowners. And I think that's a real key way forward myself. So that's principally why I joined. There's a quite nice magazine as well, to be honest, which has routes in and issues around walking articles, reviews of gear, that sort of thing. There are local groups. We've got a very active group where I live, so you could join to meet like-minded people as well. As you hear in the interview with Angela, they did a response on behalf of people walking to the Sustainable Farm Scheme in Wales, and they will campaign government where possible. They're certainly right at the forefront of pushing the fact that walking is good for people, it's good for mental health, it's good for physical health, and it's part of the answer when it comes to solving the demands on the NHS and helping people get more active and more outdoors. So they're not an environmental campaigning organisation, but they do support a healthier, more biodiverse countryside, but they're well aware of the need to work with a whole range of landowners. So have a look. You know, joining these things is not expensive. Obviously, if you're doing quite a few, it is. But I don't think it's a bad idea to have a look at the Ramblers and just see what's going on, and at least just support that campaigning work. Okay, back to the podcast. Cheers. So, what are the lead sort of policies at the Ramblers at the moment? What are your campaigns? What are what policies are you pushing that Matleys might be able to help and support with?
So the deadline for the Sustainable Farming Scheme was last week, and working with our excellent volunteers and members, we've just responded to that to make sure access is in there as a public good. And I have to say my policy manager has done a really great job, and looks like access is getting in there. So again, to support us in wanting access within the body of that would be amazing.
Sorry, the Sustainable Farming Scheme has probably been dominated a bit recently, hasn't it?
Yes.
So it is worth talking about that. Let's see if I've got it right. In Wales, farmers will be paid support payments for the entirety of their farm, not just the productive land, as long as they do 17 basic universal things. And now I looked through these universal things, and some of them are very farmy. I don't really understand them all. But I don't remember seeing footpaths and access in there. So did I miss it, or is it not in there?
You might have missed it. It might not be in there in that way.
I see.
It's taken a lot to get it mentioned within the bill as something. So it may not be one that they have to do, because it is a statutory duty to be kept open.
Right.
But improvements is something that could be supported.
That's interesting. So they've already got a responsibility to keep open the rights of way.
Yep.
Which sometimes seems a bit unfair, doesn't it? They don't have a responsibility to keep the road open outside the farm, but they do have a responsibility to keep the footpath open. And does that mean they're supposed to look after the stiles and gates?
Yeah, so if it's on their land, that sort of furniture. But working with the local authorities, I think, is the key thing.
Right.
So working with the local authorities, who know that path network really well, to work with the farmers to make sure we get the most accessible sort of furniture in is something that we do. And again, also to keep paths open. I mean, when you're busy farming, that's a full-time job. And I'm sure many farmers aren't using stiles, you know, they're having to get about their land. So, you know, it's understandable they won't be thinking about
that.
And it only takes one gate left open to cause, you know, again, it goes back to behaviour, doesn't it?
But would there be a pot of money they could chip into for this new farming scheme to help them with gates and stiles?
I'm not sure if you'd have that available through the farming scheme, but certainly the local authority have a number of gates. In fact, some that we're going to be putting in Powys over the next couple of months.
Has the Ramblers' response to the sustainable farming scheme been just around paths and access, or do you have a sort of broader view of, you know, the sort of habitat aspects and woodland aspects?
But we stick to the paths and access, whereas obviously generally as an organisation, when we're working with communities, as we did in our Paths to Wellbeing project, I think we put in over 3,000 trees, for example, across the whole of Wales. And I think it's important that we are mindful of the environment that we're walking through, and we should be part of that improvement, that nature crisis that's going on. I mean, we're out there. We shouldn't just take it for granted and expect other people to care for it. It's part of our journey, literally part of our journey.
Yeah, it can be confusing, you know, as somebody who works, plays and lives in the countryside. I'm never quite sure who's representing. So would it be different people representing the environment to representing the footpaths? And that does that dilute the voice, or does it mean you've got specialists on specialist campaigns?
Yeah, so we have we sit on the Wales Environment Link. So we have a very tight connection. So if there's anything specifically around access, then of course we can help set up a response. But we also work with and support everybody else around the table, so whether that's Woodland Trust, Wildlife Trust, RSPB and others, you know, where we think that's appropriate.
So do you work with the Farms Union of Wales and the National Farms Union too?
Yes, we have done, and we continue to, and it's particularly again around behaviour, making sure that countryside code is well supported, well known. I think there's a whole thing missing around that. I don't think it's in schools as it used to be in my day. I think we put these things in place and then walk away and we don't promote them.
It's funny, actually, it just popped in my head. When I was researching for the Mountain Leader of Practical Manual, I had different advice on how to behave around cattle.
Right.
So the NFU have some advice, the Ramblers have some advice, and I think there were two or three other people had advice as well. So it's just bringing all that together with the Countryside Code. I sometimes have to call it a secret code, the Countryside Code. It needs to be out there, it does. Doesn't it?
Yeah, and clear, and like as you say, and simple. So we get asked a lot about, you know, what should we do if I've got a dog and there's cattle as well? You know, you let that dog go, sort of thing. And
Yeah, it's interesting, that cattle. There was an outdoor recreation bill you mentioned as well. Is that a new thing?
So there's been discussions, interestingly, I think... this Friday in England, they're discussing it. My brother let me know because he's involved as well. But this is...
So is it a UK bill? Or?
No, Wales.
Oh, okay.
But obviously England's seen what Wales are talking about. Ah. And say, that might be a good idea.
Yeah.
But the idea that primary age school children should have a free week you know, once in their sort of school time in the outdoors is something that we wholeheartedly support.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly where that's at the moment, but my policy manager has been engaged.
Yeah.
And yes, very, obviously very supportive. But they're the next generation, aren't they?
Of course they are, yeah. I mean, and again, listeners will be really interested in that. I think it's outdoor recreation bill, is it outdoor education bill?
Outdoor education.
Outdoor education. Yeah. And so it's been proposed in Wales that every kid in Wales has a 5-day residential. And currently it's got cross-party support.
Yes.
I emphasise currently because other bills have gone with cross-party support and one party have moved away from it.
Depends
it,
who's
they?
Putting it forward. And if somebody else has put it forward before and it didn't get... Yes, yeah. It can get a little bit...
Until messy. Recently, we seem to have much better cross-party in Wales.
Yeah.
But it has deteriorated a bit, hasn't it?
So we're the Secretariat for the Outdoor Recreation Cross-Party Group in Welsh Government. Wow. So, again, we do work closely and support... Yeah. All users of the outdoors.
Yeah. So are there members of the Senedd who are walkers?
Yeah, so Hugh Iranka Davis, who's also a president of ours, he's a big walker and cyclist.
Right.
A lot of them actually are. Of course, we always do our research and I always meet Senedd members outdoors with my dog walking and they've all got used to that now. So.
Great. And so are they campaigning for, you know, does that give you optimism and hope that we will get a better footpath network in Wales?
I think we will, and I think you're right. What we need to do is pull together better than we are currently.
Yeah,
we shouldn't, we can't be a lone voice, but we're constantly banging on. Yeah, I think that's maybe something that as an organisation we could be a little bit better at.
Yeah. What other campaigns are there, Angela? I know you were doing walks for mental health a few years ago. What else are the Ramblers up to on that national scale?
Yeah, so Wellbeing Walks is, so I think it was Let's Walk Cymru that we used to run across Wales and supporting walks. So we do that now through our community engagement work. So an example would be not far from here in Denbighshire, we've been working with Mind to take groups out walking.
Yeah.
And again, it's that low level walking. As a support for mental health.
Yeah.
And then we have Wellbeing Walks programme that has initially been run across England, but it looks likely to come into Wales and Scotland to engage local authorities to run those very short, accessible walks.
Well, that's really important, those walks from where people live
yeah.
to get them outside and get them walking. It's not all about going to Eriri and climbing the mountain, is it?
No, so our vision is to see walking at the heart of communities. And COVID, boy, did that happen. Funny, I could have bottled that.
Yeah.
I mean, people were walking everywhere, weren't they? And they were connecting with each other. It does feel like we've lost a little bit of that momentum now, but it was a golden opportunity, I have to say.
It's disappointing how much we've retreated, isn't it, from the good aspects. I know for some people it was an awful time, I really do. But there were some nice things happening, weren't there? And it's a shame they've fizzled a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
But there's a sense of optimism in Cymru that we will make a difference. The active travel, the outdoor education bill. Hopefully, you know, the sustainable farming scheme will contribute positively as well. So, Angela, it's a fantastic job. Do you know what? Part of me, this is kind of a dream job, isn't it? CEO of Ramblers in Wales? Come on, that's got to be one of the best jobs going. So, how do you come to be doing it?
Well, I sit here with my walking boots on, feeling a bit smug. But actually trained as a wildlife artist originally.
Oh, wow.
And went on to use that skill for Heritage Coast and other sort of bodies. Then went on to become a countryside ranger. Working for Forestry Commission, RSPB, Wildlife Trust. So I went from looking at nature, illustrating it, to telling people about it, to then taking on environmental education, taking kids out, which is my absolute favourite, and then engaging communities who've perhaps never had the opportunity, getting them in the outdoors. The rewards are massive, you know. The one story I have to share, it's the one that keeps me going. I worked with a group called Turning Point when I first came to Ramblers. I only came for a year originally. It's 15 years on
now.
Wow. And I went off to a group called Turning Point internationally, and they deal with young adults who are coming off substance misuse. So, crikey, where'd you start with that? I know nothing about this. So I said, perhaps I could take them around walks locally, and they said that's probably not a good idea. It might have been where they've had experiences that were okay. We learned something there. So I took them to the coast, and then I took them to the forest, and it just started to snowball. And it got to the point where they did the Three Welsh Peaks. They raised money for other charities. But I remember one young woman, we were walking up Pen y Fan, and she didn't have the most appropriate clothing on. And I could see slash marks up her arm, which I have no experience of, but thought, you know, she's obviously had a tough time. She got to the top of Pen y Fan and said she didn't realise you could get a high without taking drugs. That's what does it for me, and that's why I keep soldiering on, because brilliant. The benefits just are brilliant. Massive.
Brilliant. And so, what about the future? What's next? Where are you heading next?
Retirement.
Oh, for goodness sake. You've got a lot to do before then, surely.
I still think putting walking at the heart of communities, I still think there's a lot to be done there. Yeah. I mean, if we could just, you know, at least get Welsh Government to recognise the absolute value of access and being in the outdoors a little bit more, so it gets that more support, recognition, I think that would be a good thing.
So how can individual mountain leaders help support the work of the Ramblers?
Well, I guess there are obviously talk about us, promote us. That's always good, because the membership then will ensure that we continue. You know, we do have legal cases in Wales, and we're not afraid to fight legal cases where there are problems. Volunteering on footpath maintenance work is a big one. That seems like a nice sort of sharing of, you know, help us open up the paths, because you'll benefit, you know, you'll get to those crags easier or whatever that is.
And reporting blocked paths, do that to the local authority or the Ramblers?
So you can go to the local authorities, but if you imagine that the local authorities, to clear their backlog would take 17 years currently.
Wow.
So that is literally the situation we're in. But if you contact Ramblers, we have local volunteer footpath officers on the ground who will know the area intimately.
Yeah.
And if it's a landowner issue, they may know the landowner. And they're also quite closely linked with the local authorities.
So presumably it's worth doing both?
I would do both, yes.
She'll take that forward myself. Angela, we're coming towards the end of our time now. It's been a fascinating chat for me, and I'm sure people have learnt a lot about the Ramblers. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about before we close?
No, just really just to thank you very much for inviting me to come and speak. It's my first podcast.
Well, you're very welcome.
That's very exciting, and of course being back in North Wales, where I was brought up with my father mountaineering down the road, is just an absolute pleasure, so thank you.
Yeah, we won't share what we're looking at out of the window, and it's not raining in Kalpacurig.
It's fabulous.
No wind, and it's absolutely gorgeous, so there we go. Thanks very much, Angela. Diolch yn fawr.
Diolch.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Outdoor Lives. This podcast is brought to you free to air on Spotify, and I sponsor it myself, mycrane.co.uk. You can get early access to ad-free versions if you join my Patreon page. Have a look at patreon.com/mycrane. It's £4 a month, and there's all sorts of other stuff on there. Particularly popular are the e-learning modules, which you can do in your own time. There are bonus podcasts, bonus blogs, there are Nature Notes videos, and one of the new developments is the downloadable PDFs from Nature Snowdonia. So I've taken chapters of Nature Snowdonia, updated them, added in a little bit, and you can download those to your phone. All that stuff comes free with patreon.com/mycrane, including early access to ad-free versions of these podcasts. Love to see you there. Thank you for listening.